And this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. We're going to speak to a guest this afternoon who is down at the, is already ensconced at an encampment, at a protest encampment down at the site of the Republican National Convention, which he calls Romneyville, like Hooverville from the 30s. So his place is called Romneyville, and his name is Reverend Bruce Wright. We're going to talk to him in a little while, and then we're going to amplify that discussion later on with what's going on in preparation for both these conventions. Both Mr. Hope and Change and Mr. Moneybags are stepping on dissenters as if they were bugs. So we will let me mention two things. I want to make sure that everybody understands what my job is here, as if it hasn't been made clear already, what I consider my job to be. My job is not to represent the Democratic Party or to attack the Republican Party on the behalf of the Democratic Party. Is one party worse than the other? Probably the Republican Party is worse than the Democratic Party. Is Romney worse than Obama? Yes, he is worse than Obama. However, my point of view and what I feel like my job is here is to point out the structural similarities of both of them, that they're both deficient in meeting anything like the minimum needs of democracy. That's the way I see it. So we'll be back. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. All right, this is Mike Fader again, and one thing to remember to do is to check out and get involved in our Facebook page. The conventions are coming up. We are going to see, as much as the media is allowed to show you anymore, as opposed to what they could show you in the 1968 Democratic Convention when the whole world was watching, what the media will be allowed to show you may turn out to be a turning point in the way democracy is actually functioning. It could be like taking the pulse or a general checkup of democracy, because both of these conventions are set up and both of these cities are set up, starting from the top down, Homeland Security and one assumes the administration, Obama and Romney, to suppress dissent. Democracy is considered a plebeian annoyance to the people at the top now. So it would be fascinating and behooves all of us to watch what happens as much as we can see it at these two conventions. And today we're going to talk about something that's going on down in Tampa, and we have with us Reverend Bruce Wright. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay. Do you mind if I tell people a little bit about your background before we go on?
Sure, no problem.
Okay. Reverend Bruce Wright, who is with us on the phone from Tampa, has a doctorate in ministry and a master's in pastoral psychology. He's also a licensed addictions counselor and a licensed domestic violence counselor. And he's a deacon, ordained minister with the Apostolic Catholic Church and director of Refuge Ministries. He is one of the organizers of ResistRNC.org, ResistRNC.org, and of Romneyville, which I presume is sort of like Hooverville from the 30s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A poor, homeless, and unemployed people's encampment in Tampa. And the Refuge, that is the Refuge Ministries. Refuge has been around for 20 years. What exactly is that?
Well, it's a ministry to the poor, to the homeless, as well as recovering addicts. And, you know, we run soup kitchens, recovery houses, things like that.
So can you, there was an article, there's been a lot of articles online and in newspapers, but just recently there was an article in the New York Times, which is my, I guess, hometown newspaper here, talking about all the, and this is something we knew, all of us knew about for a long time now, but that the Homeland Security is getting involved from the top down and giving big grants and actual training to the police in these localities, Charlotte and Tampa. And the Tampa government, as the Charlotte government has passed ordinances and rules on local city laws basically to clamp down on anything that even resembles protests. So one thing I read about in the article about Tampa was that the city had leased a lot for people set aside far enough away from the convention so it doesn't inconvenience anyone for protests. So where are you set up?
Well, we're set up in what's called the event zone, We're actually in the north end of the event zone. We'd like to call it the green zone. And we're set up on private property that we leased and signed a lease for, and it was paid for. And it's approximately 3/4 of a block in size. It's right next to an Army-Navy store, mm-hmm. a huge parking lot and space behind the store.
Now, what do they mean by an event zone?
Well, that's the polite way of calling a given area. They've used other words. We've used for green zone and more pejorative things, but it used to be called a clean zone until they changed the name of it. But essentially, it is an area that is under the control and jurisdiction of police, law enforcement, Secret Service, where different kinds of things, such as free speech, are limited. Severely limited.
So how far away is, what is the closest that the event zone gets to the actual convention hall?
Well, the event zone covers everything from the convention hall about 2 square miles out.
All around?
Where we are at is about 8 or 9 tenths of a mile from the Tampa Convention Center where the Republican convention is being held.
So
as you get closer, there is a kind of deeper zone, if you will, that the Secret Service control, which is right near the convention.
So what kind of do your activities, you plan to stay where you are, or do you plan to march closer?
We're going to stay where we are, but we're also marching closer. On the opening day of the convention, we have what's called the March for Our Lives, and the sponsor of both Romneyville and the march is the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, of which I'm on the executive committee. Mm-hmm. Our founder, Sherry Honkola, is also the current vice presidential candidate for the Green Party under the Jill Stein ticket. She will be leading our march along with Jill Stein, and they're going to camp at Romneyville with us as well. And it is an encampment of the poor, the homeless, and the unemployed, as well as supporters. So our plan is to march on opening day at 3 p.m.
And to approach as close as possible to the convention hall?
Absolutely.
Now,
and maybe even attempt to get Sherry and Jill Stein inside.
Inside? Which would be a violation of their rules, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So people are prepared to be arrested?
Well, we're not seeking it, but if it becomes necessary, of course.
Mm-hmm. So the way they have everything set up, it appears as if the media controls their camera work and they get their shots tight enough, they can ignore the fact that there's even anybody protesting at all, correct?
Oh, yeah, they can certainly ignore it. I don't think the media will, to the extent that I think there'll probably be some more interesting things going on outside than all the pomp and circumstance inside. But, you know, you never know what the media will and won't cover.
Well, this is a corporate show. I was just reading in the paper just today, in the front page of the paper, there was a whole, this is about the Charlotte Convention, but believe me, as far as I'm concerned, they're interchangeable. About the Charlotte Convention was that this place called Duke Energy, which is the largest energy company in the country, has basically more or less co-opted the convention. They've, donated or leased space to the Democratic National Committee. They are funding this thing. I mean, for instance, each of the conventions gets $18.2 million in public funds. That's your money and my money to have a big party. But they say it's going to cost close to $50 million for each convention. Of course, that means rich people and corporations take up the slack. All of which is to say, rich people and corporations are the media, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And not to mention the fact that $50 million is being spent at each convention in security. And, by the way, that does not just include, state, federal, local police. But it includes military, National Guard, and yes, even private security. And there's definitely a show they're putting on.
So all of this is, if you ask them why they're spending all this money, like for instance, according to something I read here, this is by somebody named Rania Kolek. That let's see, last week the Tampa City Council voted on how to spend some of the $50 million federal grant, as you mentioned, to secure Tampa for the 2012 RNC. The grant is paying for what the Tampa Bay Times describes as the first in a series of police upgrades, which includes an armored SWAT truck and a high-tech communication system. And let's see, $237,000 on a Lenco Bearcat armored vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what is this? Are they afraid of terrorists or are they afraid of dissent?
I think they're afraid of dissent under the guise of being afraid of terrorism. You know, post 9/11, we've seen an increased militarization of the police, and we've seen adopted what's commonly called the Miami model based on what happened in Miami under Timoney in 2003 at the Free Trade of the Americas. And, and so we're seeing a kind of a jacked up, hyper militarized police.
It really gets to me that that first of all, they don't ask you or me. I mean, they're having a big party. Who is this convention for? It's a big party for the inner people in both parties. These are both just two big sort of parties. You know, like when the American Dental Association goes to Hawaii? I mean, who's that for, right? So these people are going to these places to have a big party. And, for instance, I read that in Tampa, the strip clubs are doing already gearing up for the biggest business, and also houses of prostitution look forward to tremendous business, right? So basically this is an out of control big party for the inside people. And then of course it makes money because it's a good show. It's like a reality show for the corporations and for the networks. But of what use is it, do you think, for democracy? Did it once have more use for democracy?
Well, maybe at one time it did, because really, even up until conventions, there was not a clear-cut understanding of who would be the presidential candidate for that party.
Right.
But now it's pretty much already decided, and so it's just a big, giant party, as you said, and there's very dark sides to it, too. I was talking to someone who happens to work with the white slavery sex trade, trying to keep people out of it, and they're very worried on the dark side of this whole thing, of what's going to happen during the convention. You know, the Family Values Party.
Right.
And, you know, you have this whole phenomenon that has been described, child slavery, things like that. And really, with Tampa Bay being a port and an airport as well, a large place for people to come from all over the world, there's a real concern for that. It is kind of ironic, as you mentioned, the sex industry, that, you know, one of the more, I guess, libertarian progressive types of people in our area who has been very outspoken against the Republican Party stands to profit quite a bit, I'm sure, off of his exotic dance clubs during this time.
Oh, yeah. I read that they're looking forward to, like, this is almost like, you know, Christmas for craftspeople.
Yeah. Yeah. And, again, I want to mention it's a Family Values Party. In fact, one of the sad things that we're seeing here, and as a minister of the gospel and someone who believes in the values that Christ taught, it's really disturbing, is the number of churches that are welcoming the Republican Party and not very welcoming at all to anybody protesting, including homeless and poverty advocates such as ourselves. We've had very little interest on the part of churches or religious institutions to offer housing or support at all to people coming to dissent.
Now, isn't that, I mean, that's extraordinary. I mean, you know, the representatives of Jesus on earth.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, here's the kicker. One of the largest mega churches in the area called The River, the minister, Rodney Howard Brown, is on Christian television all over the country and world. Their church is going to be the host site for the Tea Party gathering, which happens on the 26th, the day before the official convention. They're going to have Herman Bain there, Michelle Bachmann, all the muckety-mucks of the Tea Party. And it disgusts me. I think, you know, if Jesus were around, he'd probably be going through there like the temple, right. like Jesus did with the temple money changers.
Well, how do they, I mean, do they need to, I guess they don't need to justify anything. They are what they are, right? But, I mean, have you ever challenged them? Or how do people who profess to be practicing, all-encompassing Christians justify supporting people whose hatred for poor people is so aggressive and overwhelming?
Well, they justify it on the so-called family values. You know, they're against abortion, which, of course, yeah, let's be pro-life up until the child's born, but then after that, if it's a single poor mom, cut them off of welfare and benefits.
I never understood that part.
But they justify it on the anti-abortion thing, or, you know, being against gay rights or whatever. You know, the fundamentalist right-wing Christianity, in other words, that really the Christian right kind of started to wane in its popularity, and I think to some extent reinvented itself as being part of the Tea Party.
Well, I mean, not that I'm an expert on it, but I have read, you know, the Gospels, right, word for word, because it's some of the most beautiful and inspiring things there are, though I am not Christian. And my understanding of it, and I think any fifth grader's understanding of it from reading it, was that Jesus said he was here for the poor.
Yeah, you would think that would be pretty clear to these groups, but instead they kowtow to the moneyed interests because they want to live their lavish lifestyles. They're truly capitalists, and capitalism has a real deficiency when it comes to dealing with the poor, and really, honestly, capitalism is at odds, at least in my opinion, with the scriptures. You know, if you remember in Michael Moore's film, Capitalism Kills, you heard Bishop Gumbleton, of the Bishop of the Detroit area, refer to capitalism as a sin. So, I you know, it amazes me how some of the doorkeepers or gatekeepers of the big moneyed interests end up having a religious tie.
Well, yeah, I mean, what the rich man came to Jesus, was it before or after the Sermon on the Mount, and said, how do I enter the kingdom of heaven, which can be, you know, differently described, you know, either in an earthly way or a supernatural way. And he said, right, the one of the most famous things that he ever said was, give all you have to the poor, all of it,
yeah.
Right?
And yeah, and that it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
Than for a camel to go through the eye of a needle.
Well, basically, we're getting a lot of people down in Tampa in a couple of weeks who aren't concerned with this kind of thing. So, especially when you see somebody like Paul Ryan being chosen, then you know that's the last nail in the coffin.
Yeah, Paul Ryan's and the Paul Ryan budget are two one of the most, I think, heinous budgets ever to come out. And you know, Jim Wallace has said. Budgets are moral issues, and I agree with him on this. Some of the most heinous policies to come out yet are in this Ryan budget. And, you know, policies against Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. It's really strange that Romney picked him, to be honest with you, because, man, he's not going to, it's not helping your case in Florida with the number of retirees we have here. So, I don't know.
I don't get that either. It's almost like he took a photostat of himself and put it up there, and that's what's running with him. Couldn't he have picked at least Rubio? I mean, there are a lot of Latinos who are voting, right?
Yeah. I don't understand it at all.
Oh, well.
But, you know, the truth is their interests lie, as does truthfully the Democratic Party, with big money.
Big money
is what controls politics.
I was just going to ask you that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm not just saying this like shooting from the hip. I mean, I've done a lot of reading and a lot of observing about this, and I've been around a long time. I don't really see a whole lot of difference in terms of capitalism's hold on these two conventions, and even in the way that they're treating protesters.
There really isn't, and this is one of the things that people fail to realize. You know, a lot of people had hope when Obama got elected, and certainly as far as race goes, it was important.
Mm-hmm.
But people didn't look behind the scenes. They didn't look to the fact that the largest contributor to Obama was the largest contributor to McCain, and that was Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. And that the banking industry, which is what a lot of this uprising has been about with Occupy, are the ones who control, Wall Street controls Capitol Hill and the White House.
It wasn't just that also. I mean, if you look at Obama's career, and you don't have to look too deep or too far or wide, there's a woman named Penny Pritzker, who is one of the owners of the Hyatt Hotel chain, which recently had a tremendous argument with its workers because they were paying them nothing and giving them no benefits. And she's the one who basically made his career in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but so how did... I don't know. This is a big question, and obviously it's not easy to answer. How do you figure we got to the point where, because you remember, I don't know how old you are, but probably old enough to have seen or known people at the Chicago Convention in 68?
Yeah, my dad participated.
Okay, there you go. So
he's a lifelong Democrat and a union organizer and actually worked on the governance campaign.
Okay, so at least you're a generation who's... parents were involved in that. I'm that old that I was sort of in the middle of that on the scene, right? Not that I was there, but part of that whole movement. And but I remember there was a floor fight. There were lots of floor fights, some literal floor fights. But, there were arguments about who's going to get elected in the end. And it was a far more democratic process. But also there was a lot of violence. But that suppression of dissent happened, and the whole world saw it, literally, and the Democrats lost the election, I think, because of what happened at the convention. The way that they sicked the police and the National Guard on a bunch of basically aimless hippies, then also caught a bunch of innocent citizens in it. Dan Rather got knocked to the floor by a police thug while he was covering the convention, right? So this is the first time that anybody saw that kind of thing. But here's the question to you, right? You've been around. You've been doing these things a long time. And if you just tuned in, we're talking with Reverend Bruce Wright, who is down in a place he calls Camp Romneyville. And he's a minister and also an addictions counselor, a domestic violence counselor. And he is with a place called ResistRNC.org. So if you want to get involved with this or help out in any way or participate, it's called ResistRNC.org. Here's my question to you, and I know it's a hard question, but how do we get to a place where both parties consider any kind of dissent or protest or even the appearance of poor people to be an insult and an attack on them?
Well, I think we got to the place we did because through the years, really beginning back even before Reagan, but Reagan kind of encapsulated it. I actually, ironically, for a period of time, my form of rebellion against my father's progressive politic and my grandfather, who was a Marxist and campaigned for Eugene Debs, I rebelled against it by being part of the Christian right. I went to Falwell School at one time and was part of the so-called moral majority.
Mm-hmm.
We got to this point because, first of all, we... Essentially, took the power and control away from the people and from things like unions and gave it to corporations. And increasingly, corporations had more and more ability to have influence over politics. And you saw the income gap grow mm-hmm. to the point where the average CEO makes 350 times the average worker now. You saw the emergence of things... that suspended constitutional rights after 9/11, like the Patriot Act 1 and 2, and then you saw these other draconian rules that militarized different areas and took away posse comitatus and things like that. And then you saw Citizens United happen. Well, prior to that, you had Glass-Steagall.
Mm-hmm.
These things increasingly took away the power from the people and gave it to corporations, which really... corporate control of the government is fascism.
I agree, and I think you've got your finger on exactly what happened, and that is truly what did happen. However, what I always wonder is, since the people of the United States get to vote for candidates, and they get to choose who's running for office, and presumably some people have an understanding or even some dim understanding of democracy, even though they don't teach that very much in school anymore, these people who gave away all this stuff to the corporations and allowed them and are still allowing them, including Obama, every minute to get away with this stuff. Obama has signed more laws and rules interfering with people's constitutional rights than Bush ever did. How is it that we as a people in this country voted for all these people? Why did this happen? How did this happen?
Well, I think we, first of all, to some extent, began to become lazy in our and taking for granted what is supposed called democracy here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we continue to use archaic methods such as the Electoral College rather than popular vote. The Electoral College was created for a different era in American history when we didn't have the technological capability we do now.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to stand by as technology replaced the worker, thinking it would make our lives all easier, but instead of making it easier, which is what it should have done, it made our life harder because we no longer created or produced anything. We became a consumer nation and a service industry-oriented nation, and so we began a downward spiral in wages. And all these things is kind of like the old frog in the proverbial frog in the kettle,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you turn up the heat on the kettle slowly so the frog doesn't know it's being cooked. And that's what's happened to us, and we weren't really carefully observing what's going on. And I think to some extent became lazy.
So basically,
Revelation speaks of a time in history where the church becomes fat and lazy and rich, and they act like they have need of nothing and no longer care about others.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that analogy is to some extent true of the United States. You know, we're an empire. We've become an imperial power. Really, capitalism has gone beyond imperialism. It's become a global corporate force. And we've allowed this to continue to happen because we thought it would make our lives better, but instead it's made us enslaved.
Enslaved in a double way, going in both directions. We're enslaved to our whatever creature comforts we still have, and we're enslaved by the thought that we are somehow better or exceptional. You know, as you describe it and as I've been thinking about it, we really, I mean, and this sounds, you know, when people on the left or liberals say this kind of thing, it's the first thing that Republicans or patriotic, quote-unquote, Americans pounce on, you know. But truly, if you study history, just the slightest study of history, we have become like the Romans, like the British once were, like, dare I say it, the Germans endeavored to become. You know, we are basically the Roman Empire now.
I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, as a religious person, it troubles me because, in the case of Germany, for instance, religious institutions as a whole went along with what was going on, except for people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer and others who spoke against it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a truly dangerous thing that's happening. And I do believe that, you know, there have been many people speak about this, including people much more knowledgeable than me, like Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Gore Vidal, you know, other people who've spoken about the extent to which we have become and are becoming a more fascist kind of country.
And what happened with these other empires, too, especially with the Roman Empire, because it lasted so long, and you could see the demise of it. It wasn't like a big shocking war that happened with Germany. But the Roman Empire, because of their practices, because of, this is how I see it anyhow, because of the moral collapse and the way they treated the rest of the world and stole the rest of the world's goods and killed people and enslaved people and just stole everything in the rest of the world and brought it to Rome, a certain portion of the citizenry there, certainly the people who ran things and who owned things, became so decadent and lost all sense of direction and morality that they collapsed from the inside. So they were getting attacked from the outside from people who they had abused, you know, other countries and other tribes forever. And then they just fell apart morally on the inside. And clearly, if you look at American culture, even just regular middle class or lower middle class or any form or level of American culture, I mean, are you aware of this new show that was introduced on NBC recently?
I heard about it.
Well, it's called Stars Earn Stripes. And, you know, it's a reality TV show where people like Todd Palin, I hate to even say it out loud, Todd Palin and other people of his ilk, they participate with first of all, it's hosted by General Wesley Clark, who was actually once upon a time a real general in the real world. And he's the MC. And these people participate in training, very realistic military training exercises, and they score points by capturing the enemy and or perhaps killing the enemy. And it's people like Todd Palin who are guided by special ops and other people. This is the newest show in America.
It sounds like the gladiatorial matches in the end of the Empire.
Doesn't it? See? You got it. I mean, we have gotten to that point. It's bread and circuses and gladiatorial contests while the people in charge rape the world and make the rest of us poor. I don't see any other comparison left, you know.
There really isn't, and that's part of the problem is that people do not have, unfortunately, either the access to or the willingness to have an honest historical analysis of what's going on and really looking at the reality that we are and that we are becoming. And it is frightening because, you know, Hollywood seems to know about this. I mean, it has all these movies that have come out, like The Hunger Games and, you know, The Matrix and V is for Vendetta and blah, blah, blah. You know, that really, it's funny how Hollywood seems to have some understanding of it. Ironically, in some cases, the actors are otherwise right-wing supporters of Republicans. You know, you look at even the Terminator movies.
Mm-hmm.
You have Arnold Schwarzenegger as the star. And so, and corporations increasingly being the ones that are controlling the world and the enemy. That goes even back to movies like Blade Runner.
So,
Corporation.
Well, Blade Runner is one of the ultimate expressions of that. I mean, where, you know, corporations do become the actual government. So after having laid all this out, this gloom and doom, on two levels, let me ask you, you know, questions. What can we as a people do about it? And what specifically are you and your group going to do down there or what you hope to achieve?
Well, the first thing is we have to be courageous and not buy into this fear. Of course, you know the famous statement, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Was that Roosevelt had said that during the Depression, actually. We have to be courageous. We have to be willing to make a stand. We have to be willing to be militant and even, if necessary, be involved in civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience like Dr. King did. We have to be, religious institutions especially, have to be like Dr. King and others and be a prophetic voice against injustice. Like Reverend Jeremiah Wright was in the previous election that Obama did everything he could to distance himself from this guy, even though he had been in that church for 20 years. So we have to be courageous. We have to take a stand. We have to take a stand based on principles of nonviolence and love and realize that people have been duped, and we have to be willing to put our bodies, I think this is a saying maybe Gene Depp said, I can't remember, but put our bodies in the gear of the apparatus and disrupt and make it impossible for them to function.
You know,
we have to.
Yeah, could have been him, or even Mario Savio, who did the free speech movement, I think, maybe said something just like that. You have to throw yourself into the actual machinery and stop the gears from turning. You know?
That's exactly right. And we have to be willing to create alternative communities based on mutual support and mutual encouragement of one another. I mean, really, part of what the Occupy movement was about was creating an alternative society where people govern themselves. We have to take it back, and that's what we intend to do. That's part of what we're going to be doing with these marches. If we're just going to have civil, obedient marches that are permitted, then what we've in effect done is said that what they are doing is right, and we can just, and the best thing we can hope for is to go along with it and hold our little protest signs and be marginalized. But what the Occupy movement has taught us is that we have to do more than that. We have to take back public land. We have to take back the things that belong to the people and demand our rights and really demand justice for the working people and the poor of this country.
Well, how do you convince a narcotized, you know, American public, which is used to hearing that the Occupy people are dirty, filthy? You know, the media ignored the Occupy movement or they ridiculed it, one or the other or both. And then the Occupy movement kind of got broken up by a militarized police. And the Occupy movement did not sustain itself. I don't know if it could have sustained itself, but in terms of pure occupation, they all basically got busted up, except for a couple like yours, you know, which are established down there. But it's the general public that has to understand this. I remember Gandhi was saying, I was reading about this, that Gandhi was saying that his demonstrations were aimed straight at the middle class, or the, you know, the satisfied class of the mass of Indians, right? Not the absolute poorest people, because they understood him and they were with him. But it was aimed at the satisfied class. And in this country, we don't have much of a middle class left, but we have a kind of fluctuating middle class, which is between lower middle and upper middle. And they are the ones who accept everything that is handed to them in terms of what politicians say, what the media says. I mean, how do you get through to these people when they don't even know you exist?
Well, I think to some extent we have to create events and actions to get that attention. You know, certainly Romneyville has been getting international as well as national media attention.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we have to be willing to get back to a grassroots understanding of educating people, informing people, giving opportunities for them to hear about this. And thirdly, I think we have to, in addition to those two things, create alternative localized communities. This is what they've done in Europe. Get to the felt needs that people are experiencing. You know, we have people that are being radicalized. They just need to have that radicalization informed and educated. With the foreclosure crisis, for instance, it has become acute. You know, we have some 8 million, I think it's 8 million families have been foreclosed upon or are in foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these people aren't just the low-income people that were
right.
victimized,
right.
but they're middle-class people. For the first time in their life, are becoming radicalized. I mean, you know, I've worked with the homeless and poor for many years, but it's only been in recent years that I myself have felt the economics of it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've even been homeless and on food stamps before. You know, and I'm from a supposed professional class of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the public is feeling it. It's just a matter of taking that opportunity and seizing the opportunity to educate them in every form of media that we do have access to, such as community radio, public access, the internet, things like that.
Well, speaking of which, where can people go to read about what you're doing, and maybe even, because these days seeing is believing, where can they actually, will there be any live feeds or any pictures available or photos available of what your group is doing? And where do people go to figure this out, to find out about it?
Yes, there's going to be live feeds. And we've got independent media coming down already. Independent media has covered some of this. And we do have particular websites they can go to. One is economichumanrights.org. They also can go to Facebook and look for Romneyville.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they can go to resistrnc.org.
Resistrnc.org. Right.
Yes. And those are just three of the ways of finding out about us and what's going on. And, of course, increasingly, as an example right here with me being on this show with you, more and more independent forms of media.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think the last bastion of free media in this country is the Internet, and I hope to God we can maintain that, because that certainly has been a powerful force, you know, with Twitter and Facebook and, of course, you know, things like WikiLeaks and things like that.
Well, we've seen this kind of thing work, at least begin to work, or start to topple governments in entire countries over in the Middle East. So this is the only way it's going to work here, because the established media, you won't even know so much as there is even one. All you're going to see is a lot of cars and a lot of guys in suits. You're not going to see anybody who looks like you or anybody who's poor or anybody doing anything. Once in a while, they might show you that for a second, and that'll be it, you know. I mean, so you're saying that Jill Stein and her vice presidential candidate are coming down there to be with you?
Yes, both Jill Stein and Sherry Honkla, and as I said, Sherry Honkla is the founder of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign,
mm-hmm.
which is the sponsor. of Romneyville, and I'm on the executive committee of the Poor People's Campaign, will be there and will be staying at Romneyville and participating in the actions we're doing, including the opening march of the poor, homeless, and unemployed at 3 p.m. on the 27th, the opening day of the convention.
Let me ask you one. I'm sorry. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just think it's pretty amazing that we have this kind of situation now where there aren't 45 ballots now, 40 in 45 states.
The Green Party.
Yeah, and they finally won the ballot in Pennsylvania, which to get on the presidential ballot in Pennsylvania, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, it was only required 2,000 signatures, but to be on the Green Party candidacy, there had to be 40,000.
Why the difference?
Well, because basically politics is controlled by the two-party system, and they don't want the third party in there.
But they did get
it. Well,
that's good that they got 40,000. It shows your popular support is larger than people think, right? Well, here's a question. A lot of people, and this is the last question I want to ask you because we wanted to move on and wrap up the show here with another little segment afterwards. But once again, you're listening to the Reverend Bruce Wright, and it's resistrnc.org if you want to get more information about what he's doing down there and what he calls Romneyville. What exactly, when it comes down to politics, I mean, my attitude has gotten very, very, some people call it cynical, I just call it realistic. I don't see the difference much between the two parties, but obviously there is some difference. When you go to vote, are you going to vote? And when you go to vote, which one of these two candidates are you going to vote for?
Well, I'm definitely voting for neither of them. And, you know, I personally, as a minister, we're a religious institution. We don't endorse candidates. But personally, I can say who I'm personally going to vote for, and that's going to be the Green Party, the Jill Stein, Sherry Honkolit ticket.
But what if somebody said to you, as they say to me all the time, because I feel the same way you do, what if somebody says to you, you know what, if enough people like you do this, then you're going to help elect Romney?
Well, remember we said the same thing during the Bush era, and Gore still could have won, but it wasn't because of the Green Party being a spoiler like they said in Florida. It was because of voter disenfranchisement and of ignoring the votes of minority communities. So they have no one to blame but themselves if they lose. And let's remember also, Obama is in more military excursions around the world than Bush was.
True.
We have military bases in Africa now. We have a thing called AFRICOM. Both the parties are interested in global domination. They just supposedly go about it just a bit differently. You know, you have one guy who faces you head on and stabs you in the head on. And then you have another guy who shakes your hand, smiles at you while he's sticking a knife in your back. Which is better? Really, neither. But at least with the one, you know what you got.
Hey, you die with a smile on your face, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's no friend of the poor. And it's unfortunate, and I'm referring to Obama. It's unfortunate because he came from a background of community organizing at some level. He was involved in a church that preached justice, Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church. But along the way, you know, money corrupts. That's why money needs to be taken out of politics. All elections should be publicly funded. There should be no ability to influence elections with a dime.
Well, these conventions are publicly funded to the tune of $18.2 million. That sounds like enough to me. But now they say they need $50 million at least, and that's excluding the security, just to put on a big show. So everything is completely out of control here. I guess we're doing whatever it is we can do, right?
Yeah, that's right. We need to continue to do that. We need to overturn Citizens United, of course, because now you can, in an unbridled manner, spend as many as you want. This is going to be the most expensive election in the history of mankind, in the billions. These two, dominant parties, or the one party with two branches to it. I mean, it's beginning to look a lot like Soviet style. I don't even like to use the word communism because what you had in
that was a dictatorship.
Soviet Union.
It was a dictatorship.
Yeah, it's a dictatorship. What you had in the Soviet Union was not communism; it was state-controlled capitalism. Even Lenin said that.
You know, I get people calling me up sometimes and tell me, you know, Obama's a socialist, and I only say I only wish he was.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I'm not afraid of that word socialist. I don't know why people are, but they are.
They are because it's been connected to terrorists, and people are too ignorant to know the difference. Meanwhile, I'm gonna move on to another little end part of the show here. So, Reverend Bruce Wright, I appreciate what you're doing. I'm not going to be down there, and I'm glad you're down there doing it.
Well, I appreciate it. And again, you know, people can go to economichumanrights.org for info, resistrnc.org. I'd be glad to give my phone number too if you want.
Sure. Go ahead if you want to. I mean, yeah.
Sure. It's 727-278-1547. And we can give you direct information about how you can participate here. We encourage people to let their voices be heard at both conventions.
And can people donate or help in some other way if they're not going to be down there? Because most people aren't going to go down there.
Oh, yeah. We do need lots of resources and help. They can go to refugestpete.org. That's refugestpete.org. Or they can call me. We do have a PayPal.
Okay. All right. So I'm encouraging everybody to help these people out. We're most of us who are listening here, we're not going down there. These people's bodies are on the line. They are right now the front line in the war against this kind of fascism that's going on in both parties at both conventions. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Reverend Bruce Wright of ResistRNC.org. And Mr. Engineer, how much time do we have left? 6 minutes left. Okay, just to kind of wrap it up is, this is an endless argument that's going on between me and a lot of the listeners here. You heard what Reverend Wright said. I feel exactly the same way he does. He's voting for the Green Party. So am I voting for the Green Party. However, I understand. Look at Ryan. Look at Romney. They get in. If they have a majority in Congress, they'll throw Medicare out or they'll give Social Security to Wall Street. They'll vote it to give to Wall Street. People will be retiring at the age of 70 if they're ever allowed to retire. The poor will starve to death or die of disease or illness because they won't get any money from the government. It will be one step closer to fascism. And so I know plenty of people who are voting for Obama, not because they can stomach him or like him or they detest him any less. It's just that they feel like that he and his party will not rush towards fascism or attack poor people or women as badly as the Republicans. And I'm sure there's some truth to that. But as far as I'm concerned, you're looking at two arms coming at you. One's got a knife and one's got a club. And one of them is coming a little slower and one's coming a little faster. They're both going to kill you. And we have to look at the larger picture here. We got to pull back and just use our facility for understanding and intuition and a simple understanding of history and notice that these two parties are just arms from the same brute body, from the same brute body. On the front page of the paper today, you have an article that Duke Energy, which is the largest energy company in the country, right, controls the most, energy sales to the most people in the country, is basically in charge of and running or spending the money, rather, at least. They are basically the major corporation involved in the Charlotte Democratic Party convention. You take it for granted, the Republican convention, they got no problems with taking all the money that they could possibly get from any twisted, perverted, fascist son of a bitch like Adelson that they get. They're not ashamed of that. They're almost proud of it. You know, you got a guy who builds casinos all over the world, who bribes people, who is the definition of an immoral criminal, right, and a thug. They don't care. That's fine with them. And the Democrats at least say all the time that they want to put money out of politics. Bullshit. They don't mean it for one flicker of a second. They do the same thing as the Republicans. And, we're having a very close election this time around. And people feel like a lot is at stake. Well, you know what? A lot is at stake. But it's not going to be solved by voting for one of these parties or the other. And I'm personally getting a lot of flack from a lot of different places. I have other radio shows in other places. And I'm getting in hot water for insisting that both of these parties are part of a larger problem of corporate fascism and theft of democracy. And I think that everybody needs to look at that when you go to cast your vote. when you go to cast your vote. We can't keep choosing the lesser of two evils because we're just going to wind up with a narrower and narrower road that leads to nothing but evil. And we're in it now. Meanwhile, I was reading, I don't have time to explain it to you now, and I'll do it more at another time, but I'm reading this really good trash novel now. It's an audiobook, and it's a gigantic, long, trashy novel written by Ken Follett, who wrote The Eye of the Needle and many other spy novels and mystery novels. And he wrote a novel which takes place in medieval times in the year 1820 about the building of a cathedral. And it's all about the way people, in those days, obviously nobody voted. They just had lords with knights and with men at arms, you know, hired thugs, mercenaries, sort of like the American, contractors in the American army. And they, if they were upset about what somebody was doing in a village, like if the village wanted more rights and they wanted to, just a few basic rights, and it upset them, they would just ride out on these giant war horses and burn the village down, trample men, women, and children to death, and chop people's heads off with swords, and then go drink and hang out with whores. Sort of like what they're going to do at both conventions. You know what I mean? So this is what happened back then. So yes, we've made progress. People can't actually ride out of Washington or major state capitals on gigantic war horses, in this case tanks, and actually shoot everybody with automatic weapons and hand grenades. But how far away are we from that? Look at the militarized police. The Department of Homeland Security, which is basically our Gestapo, our national police, they have given $100 million of your money and my money. They didn't ask me. Did they ask you? To buy tanks and weapons and drones and helicopters to the local police. They're going to have thousands and thousands of cops at these places. Soldiers, drones, surveillance. For what? You think it's just for terrorists? You're the terrorist now to them. Your interest in democracy, your interest in dissent, your right to dissent as an American, you are a terrorist to them. How do we get this back? It's up to you to figure that out. Boycotting, civil disobedience on a massive scale, I don't know what. But go ahead and vote if you want. See what good it does you.